This week, August 13, 2013, on The Digital Story. Gloom and doom camera sales. An LCD-only existence. Notes from the field. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I'm happy to be home and in the studio. Had a great time on my various tours, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in story number three. But first, I want to get to the headlines, I guess I should say, because they have been popping up quite a bit lately, and the headlines have been how disappointing camera sales have been for many of the manufacturers. Now, we knew already that compact camera sales were down. That's been happening for quite some time. But the latest headlines have been more to do with compact system cameras and ILCs, mirrorless and stuff like that, and even some DSLRs. I mean, I'll just read a few headlines here that I have seen lately and read the stories that went with them. Nikon rethinks one system and cuts 2013 forecast, citing poor sales. Olympus stems losses, but pen sales disappoint. Weak demand for mirrorless cameras hurting major manufacturers. I mean, these are pretty indicative of what I'm seeing. So, you know, what's going on here? What is happening? And, you know, something that I think that's worth talking about, because what happens in business in general, my theory is that things either go one way or the other, right? It's a total momentum thing. So either things are on the upswing or they're going down. You never really get to stay flat or even in the business world. You're going up or you're going down. And what happens is a lot of times, especially when we start to see headlines like this, then it creates, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. And then consumers become more cautious and, you know, they buy less. And then we see more headlines. And it goes on and on and on until something finally breaks the cycle. What happens to camera manufacturers, in all honesty, is their problem to some degree. Now, I have to say, though, that what happens to camera manufacturers hits home for a lot of folks that are working in related industries. For example, I am a contract worker for Lopro, who makes professional camera bags and bags for compact cameras and so forth. So when camera sales are down, they are selling fewer bags. They're selling fewer bags, and then our budgets get cut. And for instance, suddenly I'm not going to Photo Plus Expo because there isn't the money in the budget to do so because of this ripple effect. So I will say, yes, to some degree, what happens to camera manufacturers is their problem. To another degree, for those of us that are in related fields, it becomes our problem too. That being said, that's not my motivation for the story. My motivation is that I think there's an opportunity emerging for those of us who are enthusiast photographers. And I'll explain my thinking here. And then, of course, you can dissect it all you want with your friends and photographers to see if it holds water or not from your point of view. But here's the thing. I think most people agree that the culprit in all of this, starting with compact cameras and then and now migrating into mirrorless and some DSLR categories, the culprit has been smartphones. And smartphones are becoming better and better at capturing pictures. You already have a smartphone in your pocket, so that's one device instead of two devices. Instead of carrying a phone and a camera, you've got to carry your phone. So it becomes the primary device, and then the compact camera or the mirrorless camera becomes the optional device, in all honesty. The pictures are good from smartphones. They're connected devices. So once you take the picture, you can share it almost immediately. There are a number of apps that are quite good that allow you to do adjustments to your images. And then with cloud services, you can back up your images and store entire libraries up in the cloud that you have access to from your mobile device. So as you start looking at all these pluses in the smartphone category, it's really not surprising that we're seeing declining sales with use only for one thing, which is to take pictures, cameras. The thing about smartphones is that as a camera, they also have their limitations. The lens that you have on there is the lens that you're stuck with. Most of the time, it's not a zoom lens. And if it is a zoom lens, it's a digital zoom lens, which we know the quality tends not to be as good. The aperture is usually fixed, so you can't play with different aperture settings. You usually don't have as many accessories for these. For instance, you don't have an external flash. However, manufacturers are and software engineers are always working around that. And now, for instance, if you have two smartphones with a flash, you can have the other smartphone become an external flash at a distance. So, you know, stuff is always happening. I'm sure camera manufacturers love seeing things like that. But generally speaking, when I notice that people are relying on their smartphone only for photography, they're working primarily with either snapshots or they're very, very artistic in the sense that they're just doing really fun things with different angles and so forth. But they're not covering events as often, even though Chicago sometimes is trying to force that issue. But generally speaking, you're not going to cover a football game with a smartphone, right? I mean, you know, still we're not to that point yet. So I think this presents a couple opportunities for those of us who like smartphones, but who also like regular cameras. And the first opportunity is that I think those that are willing to carry a regular camera and learn how to use it have an opportunity to create a wider variety or a higher level of engaging imagery. So I think that we can begin again to see some separation between the snap shooters and the serious photographers. And kind of along those lines, you know, when we talk about the declining camera sales, I think it's possible that before, a lot of snap shooters were buying DSLRs and possibly mirrorless cameras. That wasn't really the right camera for them. All they wanted to do was take snapshots. All they wanted to do was record their daily life and share photos on Facebook and things like that. And since they didn't really understand that they had other options with their smartphone or the smartphones weren't good enough yet, they went ahead and bought a regular camera and pressed that into service for those needs. When actually, when you really think about it, probably for a lot of people, a smartphone is the best camera because what they want to do, a smartphone can do. And then those of us that want to do other things, then a smartphone will cover our needs sometimes, but then we're going to need a DSLR or a compact system camera or something else in addition to the smartphone. So in a sense, the decline in compact camera sales especially is nothing more than an evolution of people who were snap shooters and casual photographers now have a device that's better suited for their needs, which is a phone that also takes casual pictures that they can share immediately. And that's really what they wanted to do. Now, for those of us that want to do more than that, and you know, I think it's safe to say that as photographers, we're also hobbyists, generally speaking. We take family photos too, right? We take pictures of our cats, right? You have taken picture of a plate of food served to you in a restaurant that you thought was pretty. And if you're telling me you haven't, then I'm going to say you are really in the minority. So, you know, we do those things also. It's just that we don't stop there. We go beyond that. And so I think what's going to happen as smartphones continue to dominate the scene, then that we're going to see a little bit of a shakeout in photography between the world of snap shooting, the world of Facebook and Instagram and those applications, and the world of serious enthusiast photography. The world where someone puts a macro lens on an OMD and gets literally inside a flower to show you a world that you never would have seen otherwise, and that you certainly couldn't get there with a smartphone. So I think we're going to start to see a shakeout. So I see that as an opportunity for me and probably for most people that listen to this show who are serious about photography. Camera manufacturers have to, you know, they have to figure this out. They do. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing them do right now is create compact cameras that are more serious. For instance, one of the cameras that I've been testing lately that I'm going to be writing a review on is the Ricoh GR that has an APS-C sensor inside a camera that, you know, in terms of dimensions is not much bigger than my iPhone and is super light and, you know, very easy to slide into my front pants pocket. Yet it has this very large sensor inside and very, very good image quality. So we're going to see manufacturers do things like that, looking for, you know, these openings, these niches where that they can exploit in order to keep their sales rolling along. But you notice that whenever they do something like that recently, it's for us. It's for us, the enthusiast photographer. It's not for the snap shooters. I mean, one of the ways that Olympus closed its financial gap last quarter, it wasn't because of pen sales. Pen sales actually slipped. What they did was they unloaded a whole bunch of compact cameras at cheap prices, and then they decided that they're going to stop making cheap compact cameras. I think Nikon is there, and I think you're going to see the other camera manufacturers falling too. They're just going to cede that segment to smartphones. They know that you know, hey, it's going away. So the new stuff that they're going to create, Nikon, Canon, Panasonic, Olympus, Sony, Fujifilm, the ones that I'm not thinking of, what they're going to create is stuff for us. And so I think in a sense that it's an exciting opportunity for us both artistically, where I think that we can begin to leverage the tools that we have to create images that smartphone people can't. And then second, we're going to receive new tools as a result of this shakeout in the camera industry. So going back to the original gloom and doom headlines, gloom and doom, well, put that in quotes, because really, as it so often is in the world of business, it's not gloom and doom, it's change, right? And we're smack dab in the middle of it. And I think in very large part, those of us that are enthusiasts, photographers, and professionals have the best opportunity to benefit from this change. And it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. So I just wanted to put that out there and let you think about it a bit. And as you read these headlines, and as you watch and see what cameras come out in the fall, we're going to see some new stuff here pretty soon. And then also watch what happens to the world of smartphones. For instance, we're going to see a new iPhone in September. We've already seen Samsung's new smartphone, the S4. That's been out for a bit now. So we're going to see both worlds evolve. Keep this in mind when I talked about today. While you watch what happens over the second half of this year, and then maybe we'll compare notes at the end of the year and see what's going on and see if we can predict what the world is going to look like in 2014, at least in terms of technology and photography. Okay, story number two, an LCD-only experience. And in a sense, I guess this is related to the first story, right? So I have been all over the place lately. I was down in Santa Barbara, Carpinteria for a while, and then I was backpacking and camping, And then I got on a plane and I went to the Hawaiian island of Oahu, and now I'm back. Now, on all of those adventures, I was working with smaller cameras because that was my job. People send me these cameras and they pay me to write reviews about them. And the only way that I'm going to be able to write a serious review is if I leave the cameras that I want to shoot with at home, so that I'm forced to use the cameras that I'm reviewing. And that's basically what I do. Now, I will confess that every now and then I might slip the OMD into my camera bag. But for the most part, I was a good boy and stuck with the cameras I had to test. And one of the things about these cameras was that primarily they use the LCD for image composition. And, you know, being in all these different environments, especially being at altitude while hiking, or being in the bright midday sun in Hawaii, you know, I just really came to the conclusion that for me, I don't care if the camera is small or big or whatever, you know, depending on what my situation is. But I do know that for the most part, I need an option other than just an LCD for composing my shots. Because I tell you, for instance, when I was hiking in Sugarloaf and we took a day trip up to the top of Bald Mountain, which is quite a workout, and when I'm up there midday in bright sunlight trying to take pictures of the other folks in my hiking party and trying to take panoramas of the great 360-degree view I had all around me with an LCD, it was tough. I mean, it was really tough. You know what I was forced to? I was forced primarily to just being able to see the horizon line on the LCD and making sure it was straight, and then also sort of gauging if I wanted the horizon line low or high in the composition, knowing with my eyes as I looked at the scene before me that I wanted either a lot of sky or, you know, a lot of foreground in the shot. That's what I was reduced to. And then, you know, later on when I got back to camp or finally nightfall happened or whatever, then I could look at the images and then see what I got. And it's funny. It wasn't that much different than shooting film, right? Where, you know, you take your best shot, right? You line it up and everything, and then you find out when the film comes back how well you did. That's the way I was feeling shooting only with the LCD. Now, one of the aids, of course, that we do have when we're working with the LCD is that if you go through, you know, almost every digital camera has an info button on the back or a display button, something like that, that you can cycle through the different viewing modes on the back of the camera. One of those almost always includes a histogram so that you can gauge the exposure even in bright light where you can't see the image. You can see this histogram because it's, you know, basically just a graph. So I did have that to help me a little bit. But I have to tell you that I was surprised, even having the histogram available, I was surprised at how many mistakes I made over the course of the month working LCD only. Things like having exposure compensation set wrong. You know, I would have it bumped up for a shot that I did previously, and then I would forget to change it back, and then I'd go on to a different scene where I shouldn't have plus two exposure compensation, and it was still at plus two, and then I'd totally overexpose it, and I wouldn't be able to tell by looking at the LCD. So unless I cycled through and looked at the histogram, which I would eventually do, but then, you know, I had already taken five or six shots, and then I'd have to either take them again or just go, oh man, what a bummer. I hope I can recover that information. I was surprised at how many mistakes I made shooting only with the LCD. So the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is that I think when you're looking for your next camera, especially if it's one of these high-end compacts that have a large sensor, or a mirrorless camera, or, you know, anything, you know, in that ilk, then make sure, or at least leave yourself the option of being able to add an accessory viewfinder if it doesn't have one already. And I'll tell you, one camera that I did bring that I wasn't reviewing that I'm really glad I did have with me was my Fujifilm X20 compact camera. It shoots RAW, has a fast lens, but it has an optical viewfinder built into it. And one point I'll tell you that I really wanted it and needed it was I took a hike up to Diamond Head while I was in Oahu, which is a great hike. You know, it's not that long, but it's steep, so you really get a good workout. And then once you get up to the top, of the lookout area there, you can look back down and see the crater. And then you can look the other direction and see Honolulu. And then obviously you can look out to the ocean too. I mean, it's just really fantastic. It was bright as heck when I was up there. And fortunately I had the Fujifilm with me so I could use the optical viewfinder. Now, it still wasn't perfect compared to a DSLR because I also wanted to use a polarizer. The X20 allows you to add filters. And the thing is, the polarizer, I would have to use the LCD to see the actual effect of the polarizer. And with the optical viewfinder, I wasn't able to see the polarizing effect, but I certainly was able to compose my shot. So it wasn't perfect, but it still wasn't bad. And by the way, most polarizers will have a little white notch on the rotating ring. And if you just rotate that notch so it's pointing the direction of the sun, you'll get pretty good effect. You'll get pretty good polarizing effect that way. And obviously, if the sun is to one shoulder or the other, the polarizing effect is stronger. Now, as it turned out, the shots are terrific and everything worked out fine. But believe me, I would have had a much harder time composing those shots had I not had an optical viewfinder. And even when I was testing the Olympic, I got caught in between about four thoughts there. The Ricoh GR, I was carrying an Olympus viewfinder with me. I have an optical viewfinder, 17 millimeter viewfinder that will slide into the hot shoe of the Ricoh. And so I could use the optical viewfinder, and I did use it quite a bit. So the thing that you want to look for if you're going with one of these cameras is, do they have either an electronic viewfinder accessory or optical viewfinder accessory? And B, is the hot shoe lined up over the lens so that if you're using an optical viewfinder that, you know, you're lined up with your main picture-taking lens? Because in all honesty, in my opinion, for those of us that are, you know, pretty serious about our photography, and LCD only existence is a tough one, and not really what's going to happen is if you're trying to go smaller with a mirrorless camera, say you're trying to, you know, not use your DSLR all the time, you want to try this out, if anything is going to send you running back to your DSLR right away is not having a good viewfinder for your mirrorless camera, trying to shoot with the LCD only. My prediction is after a few weeks, you go, bah. And next thing you know, you're using your DSLR all the time again. That's just the way it feels to me. I'll be curious to see what you think. If you want to comment on either of these stories, just go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thedigitalstory. I always post the stories on there, and there you can chat me up and let me know what you think. Okay, the last story, Notes from the Field. And this is a short one, but basically, and again, I think it all kind of hangs together with the earlier two stories, is that I really noticed over the last month that traveling lighter, in my case anyway, seems to improve my creativity. And for instance, when I did climb up to Diamond Head, which I mentioned earlier, I only brought the Fujifilm, the X20. I didn't bring a camera bag, and I just had it in a little low pro pouch that fit on my belt, and I had a little bit of water, and that's all I had. And I just scooted right up the side of that mountain there. And when I got up there, I felt great. I wasn't tired at all. And I got right to picture taking, and I had a good shoot. Same thing when we were hiking in Sugarloaf, and I went up to the top of the peak there on that day hike. That's a strenuous hike. It's basically 4 miles straight up the whole time. And when I got up there, I was a bit winded. I'll confess that I wasn't cool, calm, and collected as I wanted to be. But I also wasn't overly weighted down. And I had the Ricoh GR with me, and with the optical viewfinder. And that worked out really well, too. And when I was snorkeling in Oahu, I was using the Olympus Tough, the TG1, which is the previous model. They have TG2 out now. By the way, DP Review has a really nice roundup of their favorite rugged cameras, and the TG2 was one of the co-winners in that roundup, so it's a terrific camera. But instead of having a big underwater rig and everything, I had my little TG1. It's on a strap that goes on my arm. I can push it up my arm a bit, so while I'm snorkeling, it doesn't get in my way. And it takes terrific photos, and I got a lot of shots that I really liked with it, without the hassle of lugging a bunch of equipment. And I could just tell this story over and over and over again over the course of the last month, that having the gear that I needed with me, but not too much gear, really kept me fresh and excited, and I felt like I took better pictures as a result. And also, I wasn't fumbling through a bunch of different equipment options when I was out in the field, because I only had a few options with me. Those are what I had to use. I already had in my brain, okay, I know I got this focal length and I've got this capability. And, you know, right away, I'm positioning myself to get the appropriate shot with the gear that I had. So, again, this is something to put out there, food for thought. Sure, there are serious jobs where we need to bring, you know, our roller bag full of bodies and lenses and flashes. Absolutely. I'm not disputing that at all. But just like everything else we've been talking about today, is that not every situation is the same. And sometimes when you're doing active stuff, when you're really on the go, and you want to stay fresh, and you want to come away with good shots, and you have to work quickly, then lighter is often better. And the real trick then is to find light gear that fits your photography needs. And that's probably the what's going on there. And in line with what I was saying in the first story, that I think photography manufacturers are creating that sort of gear for us right now because they have to, for economic reasons, that we're even going to have more options in the second half of this year and more options into 2014 for getting exceptional image quality without carrying a whole bunch of weight. And I'm pretty jazzed about that. But, you know, it's got to start with the mindset. And that is the point of this story, Notes from the Field. Travel light, be creative. Okay, well, so I'm running a little long this week, and I think it's because I didn't do an original podcast last week, so I have all this enthusiasm built up in me, and it's causing me to talk too long. So we'll move through our notes quickly here. The photo assignment for August is Street Scene. This should be a favorite for a lot of you. I mean, Street Scene is always such a fun topic. Send your photos in by the end of August. One of those photos will be the Sizzle Picks Pick of the Month, and that person will get a free Sizzle Picks, which is pretty cool. And while I'm talking about Sizzle Picks, you know, they have the summer sale going on right now. And all you have to do is put The Digital Story, or TDS, in the comments field of your Sizzle Picks order, and they will take 20% off your order. 20%. That is some serious coin. So thanks to our sponsor, Sizzle Picks, high definition output for your photography. As I love to say, you could probably say it for me right now, right? It's like having a retina display you can hang on the wall. Absolutely fantastic. SizzlePix.com. And they have a tile on every page of The Digital Story. And also, I want to mention our good friends over at Red River Paper. For the shots that you're not going to sizzle, but you want to print out of your inkjet printer, Red River Paper is the way to go. You have a variety of surfaces to choose from, more surfaces than really you would ever be able to use. Top quality, 40% off on average from what you would pay from the other manufacturers. Red River Paper, they make the paper, they sell the paper, and they pass the savings along to you. And you can keep up with them over on their Facebook page, facebook.com/Red River Paper. A couple other things. I'm going to be sending out reservation forms pretty soon for the Aperture Intensive. That will be happening here in Sonoma County in November. We have folks already on the reserve list. However, there will probably be a slot or two open. So if you're interested in learning everything that you want to know about Aperture, this would be the way to do it. Just go to the workshops page on The Digital Story. There's a link at the top. Go to the send me info area. There's three fields that take you 15 seconds to fill out. Choose the Aperture workshop, and you'll get on the reserve list, and I'll make sure that you get a reservation form. By the way, during the Aperture workshops, we're not just sitting in classroom all day. We obviously take care of the business we have to take care of, but I also, you know, I like working with new pictures when we're learning Aperture. And so we'll do at least one model shoot, and we'll do some other photography too. It's a blast. You'll have a great time. And that will be coming up. So those reservation forms, I think, will be going out in the next week or two. If you're interested, go to the workshops page and do send me info, and I'll make sure you get one too. I haven't mentioned it for a while, but the book, remember that book, right? iPad for Digital Photographers. If you have the book, and if you like the book, if you've enjoyed the book, then it'd be fantastic if you posted a review. I love having reviews on Amazon. I think it really, your point of view really helps other people understand if it's the right book for them or not. And then if you don't have the book yet, I think you're missing out. I think you're missing out, because I have to tell you, I use a lot of those techniques that I wrote about in the book when I'm on the road, and I am so thankful to be able to do that light, nimble form of photography. So anyway, you can get it on Amazon. They also have the iBooks version. iPad for Digital Photographers. I think it's a steal, but that's just my personal opinion. Okay, I think that's enough for today. I'm going to be quiet now and let you get back to your normal world. I'll be back with an original podcast next week, and I have plenty to talk about. So come back and tune in and find out what's going on in the exciting, ever-changing world of digital photography. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.
Thank you.